Awesome. I want to welcome to the show Nate Bagley. He is a marriage researcher and educator whose mission is to rid the world of mediocre love. I love that. His passion is helping people do the things that make their relationships extraordinary. He publishes an awesome weekly podcast and blog post over at growthmarriage.com. Welcome, Nate.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm super stoked to be here.
Yeah, and I love this topic to talk about marriage, and it's exciting that Michael and I are doing this venture together to continue the family culture movement together and to have you on to talk about this subject because it's so important, especially for our family culture, right? Like, it starts with the husband and wife, you know,
foundation of your family culture.
Exactly. So I like to talk about the couple, you know, mom, dad as the culture leaders in the home. I mean, ideally everyone is a culture leader in the family, but as parents, we have to lead out, you know, and be confident as culture leaders in the home. But before we get started, you know, tell us a little bit more about how you got into this growth marriage and this movement that you're trying to create, that you're creating of you know, no more mediocre love.
Yeah, I kind of have a weird story. I got super interested in marriage before I ever even got married. I was a single 20 something, and I always had a dream of getting married. And I knew that when I got married, I wanted to have a ridiculously awesome marriage. You know, growing up, I'd go to hang out with my friends and stuff like that. And when I'd go to some friends' houses, their parents would have, like, I just feel really good in their home. And you could tell their parents were like enjoying each other's company, and they'd flirt with each other and laugh a lot. And there was just like a feeling of peace and in the house, and a feeling of like, there's some chemistry and some mutual enjoyment between the parents. And then I go to other people's houses, and it was just like tense and uncomfortable. And I was scared to make too much noise. And there was like yelling, and it was made me really anxious. And I got really clear at a pretty young age that there's more than one kind of marriage. And if I was going to get married, I wanted to have the former kind, the fun, playful, you know, calm, peaceful, enjoyable kind, and not the other kind. But if you look at my dating relationships through my 20s, they were a mess. And I was dating incredible women, like really, really smart, ambitious, beautiful, funny, creative human beings. And we would date for a couple weeks or a couple months, and then something would come up and I'd freak out, and I was always the one to call it off. And after a couple of years of this, I was like, okay, my relationships have two things in common. They're ending up in a breakup, and I'm a part of them. So I'm just assuming that there's something here that I need to learn. And so I decided to go on this weird journey where I would interview couples who had the type of relationship that I wanted to emulate and see if I could figure out what they were doing that I was not doing in my relationships so I could duplicate what they were doing. Like, I wanted to figure out, how do I have that type of love and what am I missing? And so I started doing that in my late 20s, just like I traveled all over the United States interviewing these couples and then interviewing marriage experts and researchers and authors and therapists and professors. And I started to learn all about what makes marriages work and started to share that information with the world. And now here I am in front of you talking on this awesome podcast. And so that's kind of how it all started. I wanted to have a great marriage myself and then found out that other people wanted this information too. And now this is what I do full time.
Wow. That's awesome. That sounds kind of similar to my story about how I wanted to figure out how to have a thriving family. And I was like, I want to talk to people who have that and see what their advice is.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
One of the best ways to learn from examples.
So while you're dating, then what is the first step that potential couples need to take in order to have this thriving, happy, you know, playful relationship going forward?
Yeah, I think the most important quality that you can look to foster in your marriage is a commitment by both people to growth. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, a lot of people look for compatibility. They look for similar sense of humor. They look for like religious upbringing and family of origin match. They look for, you know, do we think the same way about money? There's all these things that people look at. But to me, the most important quality that you can look for in a partner is somebody who's committed to growth. And when I say that, I know it sounds kind of vague, but somebody who's looking to continuously improve. And the reason that that's important is because every couple that I've ever interviewed and ever met has encountered obstacles. They've had challenges, they've had struggles. And the couples who thrive the most are the couples who look at those challenges and obstacles and think, okay, we can learn something or do something differently to turn this challenge into an opportunity to connect or become better. And the people who don't have that mindset are the people who go, oh, maybe I married the wrong person. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, maybe this just isn't meant to be. You know, they look at the circumstances and they start to step into a more of a victim role. And they might have really good intentions and they might really love their partner, but the scenario, the environment around them causes them to kind of crumble and give up and fall into despair. So I think if you're dating or if you're married and you really want to set down this path towards an extraordinary marriage, the best thing that you can do is get really committed that no matter what comes our way, we're going to figure out how to overcome it together. And I'm going to keep reflecting back on myself. What's the thing I need to learn? What's the thing that I'm doing to help create these problems that we're bumping into? What's the thing I can take responsibility for that's mine to take responsibility for or give up responsibility for because I'm taking too much responsibility on and preventing my partner from growing? So that's I think, where people should start.
I love that so much. I mean, we've read like the mindset book, you know, where it's like, mm-hmm. there's a difference to be able to recognize the difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset.
100%.
Where like a fixed mindset, you know, they look at conflict and problems as a threat and like, and you know, it attacks the ego, it attacks your pride and it yep. can really lead to shame, which is going to really kill a marriage really fast.
Yeah.
Shame is definitely, you know, it's the enemy of connection. And
absolutely.
So that's like, you know, when you think about yeah. the difference, the opposite of growth mindset, I think of fixed mindset and try to go back to the growth side mm-hmm. because I think of fixed as you don't want to grow. There's no, you just stay where you're comfortable and stay where it's like, I don't want to challenge. I don't want to, yeah. you know, I don't need any obstacles. I'm happy with who I am. Or even if I'm not happy, to test me is like, well, that's a threat to who I am.
100%.
And so or
it's just easier to stay where I am and not worry about the growth that
yeah.
even though I know I need to make.
Yeah. So that's totally. That's really great advice to be able to say, okay, we want to have a growth mindset here and be able to have that. I mean, because whenever I hear that word, like, oh, you got to see if you're compatible. I'm like, what does that even mean?
Yeah,
you know, I mean, how does that come into play?
It really doesn't. You know, some people are like, oh, opposites that are attract. And other people are like, oh, birds of a feather flock together. Like there's no universal right. rule. Ultimately, that growth mindset is key. And something you said that's really interesting is a lot of people, I think, I have so many quotes popping around in my head, but there's a guy named David Schnarch, and he says, most people get married for the wrong reasons, and then they learn to stay married for the right ones. And then there's another quote I thought of while you were talking also that's by Dr. John Townsend, who wrote the book Boundaries. And he said, mm-hmm. some of the most miserable people in the world are the people who pursue happiness directly. Oh my gosh, my phone is ringing. Can you guys hear that?
No.
No.
Oh, okay, then I'm just going to keep going. And so there's this idea that like, a lot of people, I think when they get married because they want somebody who makes them feel good. They want somebody who makes them feel happy. They want somebody who makes them feel comfortable. You know, a lot of the reason that we feel in love, whatever that is, love, especially in the early stages, is actually confused for limerence. And limerence is Twitter patient. That's a scientific mm-hmm. name for Twitter patient. You know, this being enamored with the other person. And you just like, what?
That word, yeah. I mean, just the Twitter painting, you know, it's like, oh, a little puppy love or crushing yeah. on each other, you know, it's like,
and it feels really good. Yeah. And people get married and they're like, I want to feel this way all the time. And then when that limerence wears off, which it always does, and you can get tastes of it throughout your marriage and you can learn to cultivate that feeling. But for the most part, it's going to wear off naturally. Mm-hmm. What happens is people freak out and they're like, I'm not happy anymore. And so they go seek happiness in other places. You know, they seek it in gambling, or they seek it in food, or they seek it in like meeting up with other people that aren't their partner. They seek it in pornography. They seek it in, you know, sports, in video games, in getting lost in their work, in social media. And they start pursuing the dopamine fix, the feeling of pleasure. And they start resenting their marriage. But the cool thing about having a growth mindset is when you actually show up and you're looking to grow and you're looking to take responsibility and you're looking for opportunities to be the best version of yourself, what happens is that when you do grow and you do overcome these obstacles, happiness is a side effect. Like mm-hmm. happiness, the happiness comes comes in the strongest when you pursue it the least. But when you directly pursue growth, the happiness ends up being a byproduct. It's really cool.
100%. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And that whole idea of like being having the Twitter page and that attraction, you know, there's a really good, I'm just going to refer my favorite kid's book about this isn't random, I promise, but because in the book, Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, it teaches kids about pornography, right? Mm-hmm. And it talks about the center of your brain called the attraction center. And so that's actually something that with our kids, we talk about this, like we'll be watching a cute show or something and somebody will blush or they'll kiss and it's like, ooh, their attraction center is going crazy, you know?
For example, last night we finished Avatar The Last Airbender. I don't know if you're familiar with that show.
Mm-hmm. It's a great show.
But at the end of the episode, two of the characters just have a little like kiss.
Yeah.
And that's something that we're able to use that to then talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's great to be able to have the language with your family to be like, that's your attraction center. But sometimes our attraction center can really kind of trick us or become something that, you know, like you said, it can wear off.
Totally.
So we know that growth is the most important reason to get married. So how do you recognize when your partner is somebody that has that growth mindset and is willing to accept responsibility to grow and change?
That's a great question. I think you have to have some hard conversations. Mm-hmm. How somebody responds to discomfort in the relationship, mm-hmm. I think says a lot. So I would start with like, I think it's easy to avoid hard conversations when you're in a dating relationship or early on in a marriage, but like wherever you're at in your marriage, there's things that you might feel uncomfortable talking about, or you might want to avoid, you know, they might be scary for you. You might experience some shame around them. My experience is lean into those things. Mm-hmm. You know, listen to a podcast on the topic around that. Like my wife and I, used to listen to when we were engaged, we would drive around and we would listen to podcasts on money and we would listen to podcasts on sex. And this is when we were just dating and we would use them as a springboard to talk about like, what is your perspective on this? And how do you feel about it? And look at how they deal with their emotions. Do they run away from their emotions? Do they embrace them? Do they, you know, do they feel them and lash out? Or do they feel them and then like take a second and process them and then come back and talk like a rational human being? So I think it's just a matter of like trying to really investigate their emotional maturity, their willingness to confront difficult things, and then their willingness to stick through things even if they get a little bit hard.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about this whole idea of like people thinking, oh, they'll change or I can help them to change? If there are things about them that you'd want to change, like talk about that attitude. Like that doesn't seem to me like if you go into a relationship thinking, well, I know I can grow, but if they are willing to grow, then I'm going to help them. And these things about them that like rub me the wrong way or things like that. It's like, well, why would somebody go into a relationship expecting that I want to help this person change?
Yeah, I think that's a selfish kind of love.
Yeah, yeah.
Showing up in a marriage or showing up in a relationship with the intent to help somebody change. I think that when you marry somebody or when you are married to them, real love is loving them for exactly how they are, even if they never, ever choose to change.
Yeah.
And if you can't tolerate marrying them for exactly who they are, even if they never, ever change, you probably shouldn't marry them. And it says more about you. I think a lot of the time, not, I don't want to say all the time, but a lot of the time, and I want to make an exception here. There's exceptions for like really abusive behaviors. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Like if they're physically abusive, if they are contemptuous and they're constantly verbally or emotionally intimidating you or, you know, like gaslighting you, if there's severe addictions, like a gambling addiction or a drug addiction or alcohol addiction, like those are not things that you just roll over and accept.
Yeah.
I'm talking things about their character and their personality that are not detrimental to the ability for a relationship to exist. So with that in mind, I think you need to have that mindset of like, I'm going to love my person for exactly who they are and leave space for them to grow. If you're only going into a marriage with the condition that I'm going to turn you into the person that you're not right now, but who I want you to be, like I've worked with, this is one of my pet peeves working with couples throughout the last almost a decade now, is I hear people, you know, they send me an email or they call me on the phone and they say, our marriage would just be so good if my husband was just, you know, more extroverted and wouldn't just like keep all of his emotions to himself. Or my wife, our marriage would be so much better if my wife was just, you know, more sexually in tune with herself and more. And why don't they just lean into this? Why don't they just change it? Why don't they just fix it? And, you know, some of these things are innate character traits. And so what they don't realize they're saying is, I would just love my partner if they were just somebody else. Mm-hmm. If my partner would just stop being who they are, man, our relationship would be so much better. And I don't think we stop and realize how gutting that can be. It can be, can feel like just emotionally eviscerating to have hear your partner say, if you were somebody else, our relationship would be really great, but unfortunately you're not. And so I'm stuck being miserable because you are who you are.
Well, that almost says to me that person isn't willing to grow and change. If they just want to sit and complain about their spouse, then most of the time when you're pointing the finger at somebody else, it's usually you that has the the issue. And so, you know, that's on that person to be willing to accept that, okay, if I see something, then that's probably somewhere I need to grow. I need to figure out what we need to work on, or what I need to work on as the spouse in this relationship.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think we don't realize sometimes, I think it's blind to us sometimes. It's a blind spot that the people that we marry are basically at the same maturity level that we are. And Terry Real says we marry our bad deals, which basically means like you marry your partner in many ways in a subconscious way to attempt to like fix and validate the things about you that are weak and broken. David Schnarch calls, I think I talked about him earlier, but he wrote a book called Passionate Marriage. It's an amazing book. And one of the things he says at the very beginning of his book is marriage is the ultimate human growth machine. Like one of the purposes of your partner, the reason that partnership is so incredible, if you focus on growth, is nobody will expose you to your weaknesses and your shortcomings and your opportunities for growth more than your partner will. And most of the time, the things that frustrate you most about your partner are actually a reflection of something that you're dealing with or struggling with or insecure about or worried about. And I'm noticing that so much right now, like with quarantine, and you know, we're in the middle of the coronavirus situation, and I'm like spending a lot of time in front of a screen. And then I'll go talk to my wife and she'll be on her phone. I'll be like, could you just put your phone down? I think we should talk about less screen time in our family. And I'm like, I just spent 15 hours in front of a screen, and I'm probably just a little insecure about the fact that I go from computer to TV to iPad and then go to sleep. So
yeah,
it's there. It stares you in the face.
Yeah. Okay, so can I talk to him about codependence? Is that something? So that's something that, like, I want to go down this lane of, like, along that vein a bit, you know, of, like, how a lot of times, you know, that your spouse is, like, reflection of you and your weakness and stuff. Because something that, like, we've been learning and experiencing and learning to overcome is, like, this sense of, like, almost codependency, where we're, like, he sees a weakness in me or a flaw that I'm like degrading myself, and he feels like he's got to do something to help me. And then I rely on that. And then it's like, you know what I mean? So it's like, and vice versa, we do that to each other, where it's like, I see something that I'm like, I got to do something because I know he's struggling with this and I want to help him out. And then he depends on me for that in a way, you know? So it's like, have you ever seen that happen in a relationship? And
oh yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. So what is your advice?
That is a great question. I think it would go on a case by case basis, but I think, have you heard of the parenting style of love and logic?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a parenting course, and I'm learning to be a dad right now. My wife is pregnant with our first child, and I'm like going, I'm in the information gathering stage where I'm like, okay, I need to learn all the things about how to be a good dad. And so I took this course on love and logic. And to me, it was a really great way of teaching kids, But also I was watching it through this lens of a marriage educator. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, this also would totally work on marriages. And I think the idea behind it is sometimes we're really scared to let people experience the natural consequences to their choices. Or sometimes we can't tolerate the anxiety of watching our partner or somebody that we love struggle and suffer while they try and wrestle with finding a solution on their own. Mm-hmm. And when we swoop in and we save them from either the consequences of their actions or from trying to find a solution to their own problems, is we rob them of the opportunity to learn and grow. Now, I was doing this. I still do this. It's something that I think everybody struggles with in some way. The way it showed up for me in my marriage, especially the first year, is my wife is more anxious than I am, just naturally. She experiences anxiety from time to time. And when she would start feeling anxious early on in our marriage, I would start to think I was a failure as a husband. I would automatically assume she's anxious and upset because of something I did, or there's something wrong in our marriage. And so I'd start picking. I'd be like, what's wrong? Are you okay? What's happening? Do you want to talk? What's going on? And then she started to get frustrated. And then it did become me that she was frustrated about on top of the thing that she was trying to figure out. And so my way of trying to solve the anxiety that I felt as possibly being a failure as a husband was to try and fix her anxiety. And then when I couldn't fix her anxiety, she felt more anxiety that she was causing me anxiety, which would make me try and fix her anxiety more. And we would get into this negative spiral. And like, I would sit there and want to talk, let's figure this out, let's work it out. She's like, I just need some space to process. And eventually, like, we went to therapy and had some conversations with an amazing therapist. And she pointed out this cycle and she's like, Nate, do you trust your wife? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, but do you trust your wife? Like, do you trust that she'll be able to figure this out on her own? Or that if she's upset with you, she'll come and talk to you. And if she's upset about something else and needs time to process, she's going to go process it. And if she needs your help, she'll come ask you. And I was like, I say I do, but I'm not acting like I do. And so for me, it was just, I had to keep going back to saying, telling myself, do I trust my wife? Is she a smart person? Is she an adult? Can she figure this out? Can I trust her that if she's struggling and needs my help, she'll come ask? And we started creating these agreements in our marriage, and I started leaving her with more and more space, and she learned to process things faster and faster. And now both of our anxiety levels are much lower than they were before. So I would start with, when you, if you're dealing with codependency or enmeshment or whatever you want to call it, I would really take a serious look at what's causing you the anxiety. Mm-hmm. Are you scared that something's going to happen if your partner hurts for a little while? Are you scared that it means something about you? Are you scared to watch them suffer and fall on their face if they don't succeed the first time? And remember that if you do swoop in and save the day, you are preventing them from learning the lesson that will help them grow into the person they need to become, so that next time this comes up, they actually can deal with it. Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really powerful, because, you know, trust is, I talk about trust in family culture as the fuel for that, you know, to be able to go forward. I mean, if you don't have trust, then you run out of fuel, you're on the side of the road stuck.
Yeah.
And that's so crucial.
And there's so much more to trust than just like, I trust you to be home from work on time, you know?
Oh yeah.
Or I trust you when I leave the house to be able to take care of the kids or not burn the place down. Like, there's a deep emotional trust that I think a lot of us don't acknowledge, of like, I trust that you will take care of you. Mm-hmm. You know, the only major, I think some of the bigger arguments that my wife and I get in are when I actually have to stand up for my wife, to my wife on behalf of my wife. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. Okay.
Like, I've had a couple of times where I looked my wife in the eye and I said, if anybody else said what you just said about my wife, I would punch them. Be nice to my wife. Be kind to my wife. I love her. And she'll go, oh yeah, I'm being a major jerk to myself. I think those are times where it's okay to kind of step in as a partner and like push back on your partner to help them be a little more kind and compassionate when they're starting to downward spiral, but saving them from the lessons that they need to learn in order to grow is, that's a no-no.
Wow. Nate, this is awesome. This is so many great nuggets, so many great gems. And I love that this whole idea, like you said in the beginning, the feeling that you would get into when you go into people's homes and know that their mom and dad, their couple is strong and playful and fun, mm-hmm. and that you just feel the love. I love that that it's all about that growth mindset, that it's really just about, if you as a couple individually and collectively have that growth mindset, then you can create that environment that will then, you know, become the family culture that you want to create.
Totally.
So I love that so much. And I just want to thank you so much for being here to talk with us about this subject. It's so perfect and so important. and especially right now during the COVID-19 lockdown, this will probably be going on when this episode comes out. I mean, what is your advice for people right now who are in lockdown together and butting heads, and where can they start so that they can start to have that growth mindset and to thrive as a couple, even though they may be butting heads right now?
Yeah, I can think of two specific things. One thing is, I think something that we all bumped into, in order for life to work in a family dynamic, you need to have some agreements in place. Mm-hmm. And those agreements consist of, like, you're in charge of this, I'm in charge of that, I take care of this, you take care of that, so that we can just make sure all the boxes are checked and I's are dotted and T's are crossed. That's how our family doesn't, you know, spiral into chaos, is we have some responsibilities. And what happens with any big shift, you know, I'm about to have a kid, that's a big shift. When you get married, that's a big shift. When you get a new job or move to a new city, that's a big shift. Or when somebody gets sick, that's a big shift. Or when you're in a crisis, in lockdown, and like everybody's home on top of each other all the time, that's a big shift. And when big shifts happen, you need to renegotiate those agreements. You can't live your life with the same agreements in a completely different scenario.
Yeah.
And so I would have people, if they're still feeling really stuck and overwhelmed, like, block out an hour or two, go for a walk with your partner, or lock yourself in your bedroom or somewhere, go to sit in the car in the garage and, like, sit down and talk about, okay, what are the things that are working and what are the things that are not working right now? And how can we create some new agreements to manage space better? Like, maybe you need more time to yourself when you're working throughout the day without interruptions, or maybe, I need some time off from the kids since they're all home from school 24 and I'm playing teacher for several different, you know, grade levels, and it's like really stressing me out. So I need, you know, an hour or two every day where I can just go decompress. That's one thing, one place where I would start, is like renegotiate those agreements. And then the second thing is look for community. I'm a firm believer that extraordinary marriages don't happen in a vacuum. It's really, really hard to create a truly epic marriage by yourself. You need a community. You need mentors. You need people who are there to support you and encourage you and pick you up when you're struggling and take care of your kids if you are in a pinch, or like rally behind you if you're going through a struggle, celebrate your wins with you, you know, share really cool ideas of what makes their marriage great so that your marriage can be even greater. And so that's, I think, a really core thing, is to start develop, like, just like people don't like to talk about money, people don't like to talk about marriage, but when you find yourself in a community of friends who are open about how their marriage is going and what's going well and what's not, and you're supportive of each other and you're advocates, not of just the individuals, but of the marriage as a whole, it is an amazing, amazing experience. And that's where I've seen, just in my profession, people get the most ridiculously awesome results in their marriage when they're part of a community of people who are all focused on creating epic marriages themselves.
Awesome. Cool.
So can I ask, What is the best piece of advice that you've received in all of the, what you said, decade or so that you've been doing this?
Oh man, the best piece of advice. I think it depends on the scenario. Best piece of marriage advice. It's hard to quantify. It's a hard thing to quantify. I have one or two really great stories. One in Georgia, I interviewed a couple and they were in like their 60s or 70s, and they had both been doctors, professionals throughout their entire life. And I asked them, after being married for like 50 or 60 years, what their number one piece of advice was. And without missing a beat, the woman said, "Don't be afraid to be the one who loves the most." And I think there is a fear in being the person who loves the most, because, you know, we hear this phrase, he who cares the least has the most power in the relationship. You know, if you love your partner more than they love you, then you're at their mercy. They kind of have a leg up on you and can hurt you more. And to me, that's like a really cowardly way to go through your life. And I think you don't ever get to like really experience how amazing love can be if you're not both feet in. And that, that to me, like, lit a fire under my butt and made me realize, like, oh, I could go in, I could go even more in than I have been in the past, and encouraged me to kind of live that way throughout my life. The other one was when I interviewed a couple, they actually just live right up the road from us now. Their names are David and Gretchen. And when I got to their house, I love telling the story, but I got to their house to interview them for my podcast. And they were, they insisted on feeding me dinner before we could do the interview. And I was like, okay, I'll eat your dinner. So as I'm sitting there watching them prepare, they were, Gretchen was finishing dinner and David was kind of entertaining me in the kitchen, standing close by Gretchen. And then he started saying things like, hey, sweetheart, is there something I could do to help out? Can I set the table? And she goes, oh, absolutely. I'd love that, honey. He goes, oh, great. You know, can you help me find the napkins? I can't seem to find them. And she's like, oh, you're so cute, sweetie. Yeah, they're in the drawer. And he's like, thanks, babe. Love you. And they're a little bit like, it was almost sickly sweet, it felt like at first. Like, wow, these people are over the top nice to each other. So we sat down at dinner and I looked at David and Gretchen and I'm like, I got to ask this question or I'm going to regret it. But are you guys putting on a show for me? Cause you know, I'm here to interview you about your marriage, or are you really always like this nice to each other? Cause it seems a little over the top. And they looked at me and they were just kind of like really sympathetic. They're like, look, Nate, when we got married early on, we realized that there were a lot of couples that we were familiar with, and they would treat the teller at the bank or the bagger at the grocery store with more kindness and more respect than they would their own partner. And we vowed very early on in our marriage that he's like, Gretchen will always know by the way that I, the words that I use when I talk to her and the actions that I choose to treat her by, that she is the most important person to me in the world and vice versa. So we always use our pleases and thank yous. We are always kind and tender with each other. We are always, you know, we always express our gratitudes and appreciations. And those things are important because they are the proof to our partner that our partner's number one of all the other people in the world. And if someone were to walk into our house, I would want them to know that this is the woman that is most important to me in the world by how I treat her and how I speak to her. And I was like, wow, how would the world be if everybody took that approach to marriage? Like, how would the world be if every day you woke up and said, I want to make sure that my partner knows that I love them and I want them to know for a fact by how I talk to them and how I treat them. That would be pretty awesome. And so I think those two things are probably the most impactful stories that I can think of off the top of my head.
Those are perfect. Those are perfect stories. Absolutely. So I'm excited to talk. I know they're kind of long,
but.
No, that was perfect. That was great. So I'm excited to share with my audience the project that you have going on right now, this Epic Wives Experiment.
Yes.
Can you tell us what that's all about?
Okay. So you want me to tell you about Epic Wives Experiment?
Yeah.
Gladly. One of my favorite things to talk about. So one of the most important things that I've learned on this journey, and I have lots of most important things because you've heard me say it like four different times, most important thing, but this thing above all else, I think is what really gets people the marriage that they want, is you can't get results unless you take action. And a lot of people go listen to podcasts like this one that are super, hopefully awesome and give you some great ideas. They read books, they go to workshops, and they go gather up all these insights and then they think, oh, I'm a better person now, or my marriage is going to be better. My life is going to be better. But really your life only gets better and your marriage only gets better when you actually put your knowledge into practice. So the Epic Wives Experiment, I saw a problem. And the problem is that there were too many wives who are feeling frustrated, stressed out, burned out, overwhelmed, and growing resentful of their marriage. When they got married, that's not how they wanted to feel. This isn't what they wanted to sign up for. But on a day-to-day basis, they're just feeling completely just hammered with all the responsibilities. They're exhausted. And I'm like, this isn't right. People should be enjoying their marriages. So I decided to work with an amazing marriage and family therapist. Her name's Laura Heck. And we put together a series of experiments. They span the course of a month. So there's three experiments a week. And we put women through these experiments. And the goal is by the end of the Epic Wives Experiment, they have more connection, more support from their partner. They feel more like flirty and playful and back to them, their old selves, without feeling that oppressive stress and like anxiety and resentment and depression that might be looming over them. And we've had over 500 women participate in the Epic Wives Experiment. And I cannot tell you how incredible the results have been. Like, we see these women show up, and in a matter of days, like with a little bit of a mindset shift, and then we make sure that they're putting stuff into practice and taking action. They have husbands who are like baking them cookies and buying them flowers and going through the honey-do list. We have introverted husbands who don't typically share their feelings, like breaking down and crying and sharing things that have been in their hearts for a really long time because they feel safe. You know, we have men stepping up to like, there's one, oh, I love this story. Three or four days into the Epic Wives experiment, last time we did it, this woman called home and said, honey, I'm really stressed out tonight. I'm running late from work. Could you please make dinner? And then he made dinner, and then she came home and expressed her appreciation, which is one of the things that we've been focusing on. But she used the specific formula that we teach in the Epic Wives experiment. And he looked at her and goes, oh my gosh, I had no idea this was that big of a deal to you. How would you feel if I just made dinner every night going forward? And she's like, you make dinner every night? Like, she came in wanting stress to be lifted off her shoulders, and she followed like 3 days worth of tips. And all of a sudden her husband's like, I will make dinner happily every single night going forward. And we just see experience after experience like this happen, because people just, when you take action, amazing things happen. And they have the support of an amazing community. You have somebody there to hold you accountable. We give you a clear goal to strive towards. And it's like a perfect cocktail of ways to kind of tap into that growth mindset that we talked about at the very beginning.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool. Awesome. Wow. Thanks. Okay. So where can we find this, the Epic Wives Experiment or you on social media?
Yeah. If you just go to epicwivesexperiment.com, you can sign up, or follow me, Growth Marriage, on Instagram, or the growthmarriage.com is the website. That's where the podcast is. Would love to talk marriage all the time to you.
Awesome. Cool, Nate. Thank you so much for being on the show. And we really appreciate what you're doing to save and help marriages and lift marriages. Mm-hmm. I know it's so important. It's so important to our family culture. It's so important to the survival of families. And so thank you so much for your work.
Thank you, Jody and Michael. It was a pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you again for tuning in to another amazing episode of Our Modern Heritage, the Home and Family Culture podcast with me, Jody Chafee. I'm so excited to have you here. And I wanted to let you know that there's even more amazing content inside of my Facebook group. It's called The Family Culture Hackers. Inside the group, I broadcast these episodes on Fridays before I publish them out as podcast episodes. So if you want a first look at each of these interviews, make sure you come and join the group. I'm also hosting events and masterclasses and coaching calls inside of the group. So make sure you come and request to join. Just come into Facebook and search Family Culture Hackers, and you will be accepted into the group and we'll have a great time. Thank you so much for being here and for listening. And remember that if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.